This is another episode of the Comedy Reject Podcast, brought to you by Comedy Here Often and produced by Comedy Here Often. Ladies and gentlemen, hey, we are finally back again. I had so much fun with our guest last week, and so I brought his dumb ass back. Ladies and gentlemen, be easy, the homie. What's good, homie, dog?
Oh, so I'm fun, but I'm dumb. Okay, all right.
You late as shit, too. Like, I got, like, ladies and gentlemen, I had, like, told this guy from 2 p.m. I messaged him in the morning at, like, 10 a.m. Do you want to come do the podcast? Can you come by 2 p.m.? I have things to do. Ladies and gentlemen, this motherfucker messages me at 2 p.m. like, hey, I'm up. Motherfucker, what is wrong with you? Then he goes, say, I'm going to have a shower. Be right over. It is fucking 5 o'clock now. 5 o'clock now, and he now shows up. I have to teach a class and do a dress rehearsal for a Zoom show, which I think is stupid, at the same time at 5:30. And so we're trying to knock this podcast out real quick. So, okay, yeah.
A couple of key
points. Yeah, you are dumb, motherfucker.
A couple of key points. Number one, fuck you. Number two, I look damn good, so I think it was worth the wait. You know what I'm saying? Number three, I ain't never seen Sterling Scott start anything on time in his entire life.
First of all, it's a goddamn radio show, if anything. So nobody cares a fuck what you look like. Second of all, nigga, you still late. Priority. Yo, that's something that I don't even think I touched on with my dedicated 40. I was asked a few weeks ago to be a comedy class teacher. Now, I accepted because times are rough, people. And I took on this new venture. First of all, being a comedy class teacher, I'm conflicted because I'm one of the number one people that would tell you don't ever do a comedy class.
Yeah, and now
I'm the one teaching the motherfucker. So it's like, it was a new journey for me. I still will tell you guys that the best way to learn comedy is to be on stage. But I mean, looking and taking on my students and seeing their personalities, I'm understanding because it's like for them, stand-up comedy is like this completely foreign language. And the industry in itself, they don't even understand. And it's just like, it seems like this big mystery to them. Whereas it's the simplest thing ever. Like somebody was like, can you provide a study guide? And I'm like, study guide? Motherfucker, we go work on some jokes. That's what the study guide gonna be. When we done, you gonna have 5 minutes of jokes. Then you go tell them. That's how this works. Yeah. I don't know what study guide you need for this shit, but like, yo, B, you actually went to took a comedy class. Tell me your experience and what you got out of that shit, yo. Because I'm a teacher now and I'm trying to learn, but at the same time, I'm still gonna make fun of your ass because who the fuck takes a comedy class?
Yeah, man. I don't know how many years ago it was. I took Paul Sveen's comedy class. Shout out to him. He's an amazing teacher, and it went great. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he was very positive, you know what I'm saying, and just kind of gave us a couple tools and stuff like that. I had never been on stage, you know what I'm saying, when I took that class. That was like my gateway into comedy.
My thing is, though, what was it that made you say, I would like to do stand-up comedy, I should take a class?
Actually, man, I was going through some, you know what I'm saying, some tough times in my life, you know what I'm saying, just in general, and a really close friend of mine actually paid for the course for me like a gift. You know what I'm saying? It was like, hey, you should try this. We were having conversations one day about, I remember saying, you know, talking about things that I'm good at. And I was like, man, talking shit. Definitely. And I was like, man, if only I could get paid to do that. And then the next time I went over there, she was like, oh, I got you this. So you could talk shit and get paid for it.
It's funny that you not only figured out a way to get paid for talking shit, but you still talk shit when you show the fuck up late.
Yeah, listen, Ed, I that's what I do, man. I talk shit, big shit. You know what I'm saying? And I have no regrets, unapologetically.
So then, like, what elements of that class what things did you learn in that class that helped you on your journey in comedy? I'm asking as a person who wants to be able to be a great teacher. So I'm just like, you know, what is it stuff that you like? And then I'm going to tell you all the fuck ups that I've done.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't really know how much I necessarily learned, like the way you're saying it. I really, comedy is one of those things, as you know, like you kind of don't learn much until you're on stage. You know what I'm saying? But what that class gave me was the confidence and a little bit of information needed to prepare myself for my first time getting on stage, right? Like a lot of people, that's their, a lot of people don't do comedy because they're afraid of that first time. Like it's the fear. And yeah, man, just being able to get my my set together, you know what I'm saying? Not writing a joke, but more just getting a story. That's what I did. I did a story from when I was a kid, right? That I had told several times in my life. And yeah, man, he's kind of put me on the right track, guided me towards, you know what I'm saying, where I was going. And I had a great time. And I went up on stage and I bombed. And as a matter of fact, I bombed so bad I didn't even finish my joke. I couldn't remember the joke because all I kept hearing was the silence. I was like, damn.
Yo, silence is loud. Dog.
Yeah.
Yo, only entertainers can understand what I mean when I say yeah. Silence is loud, man. Yeah. You hear that silence in your sleep, boy. Yeah. Like you, that silence.
That silence keep
there.
You awake at night. You
can, oh, man, yeah. It'll wake you up. What do you hear? Yeah. Nothing, yeah. Motherfucker. That's the problem.
For like, real.
I'll tell you right now, that's a real thing. So, okay, I guess I'm, okay, a long time ago, I used to give advice all the time to young comedians, and I'm very passionate about stand-up comedy, and I could talk about it all day, every day, which is one of the reasons why I took the class. The other reason why I took the class was because I felt that if I'm teaching the class, I'll then learn myself.
Right.
And then the final reason was because I'm broke, and I needed that goddamn check, okay. And they were paying cheddar. So my students, I don't know if I'm being too hard on them, but like when I started out giving advice to young comics, another veteran comic said to me, stop giving advice. And I said, why? And he said, because you're telling them everything right, but they're nowhere near the level that they are required to be at to understand what you're saying. And I didn't get it till years later when young comics were like, remember what you said 3 years ago? Now I get it. And it's like, oh, shoot, like, for real, like, maybe I'm passing on. Because I'm like, I see comedy, you know, it's easier for me, and I see it in a different way. So in my class, every single class I teach, I start out with getting started in comedy, which is like, what are open mics? Where do you go to get booked?
Yeah.
How do you get booked? Mm-hmm. Then I teach them some terminologies, you know, like what does it mean to bomb, kill, you know, stuff like that. What is a hack? What is a heckler? And then I teach them etiquette. What time should you show up to a show? How do you get booked at a show? Where do you sit at a comedy show? You know what I mean? Like when I was a comedian, I got in trouble for that one time for sitting in the front row.
Yeah.
Then after I teach that, then I teach them the structure of a joke. This is all in the first class, by the way. Mm. Then we go through the structure of the joke, which is the way. Now, of course, when I say the structure of a joke, everybody's going to have their own terminology, their own way to say it. But how I break it down is your what are you saying? Why are you saying it? And make that shit funny. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you saying comes under premise. So for any comedians, you know, I'm talking about like your premise. What's the idea? What is the idea of what you're talking about? The next thing is the why. Because a lot of comedians, when they write a joke, the joke sucks because there's no why. Like, they'll just talk. They'll be like, so there's a couch over there. Okay, but why are you talking about that couch?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what's the significance of that couch to you? Because they just interpret it as they know their reason for it, but they never put that out to the audience,
right,
which makes for a shit joke. Yep. So what happens after you establish what you're talking about, the next thing you should know is, why are we talking about this?
Right.
And in that point is where it's like, this is where your passion, your direction, your standpoint, your feelings, your beliefs on said subject are pushed out. Now, in this section is where you will get laughs. And people will think, oh, these are your punchlines. And the reality is, no, that's your why. Now, the real punchline comes when you solve that problem. So we know what you're talking about. We know why you were talking about it. And now that make that shit funny, to put a bow on it, is the solving of the issue of what you were talking about. And in that, you'll get a massive laugh that's bigger then your why laughs, and that completes your joke. And so after I teach them that structure, we then, every single class, have to give me a premise, a why, and make that shit funny. And then at the end of class, everybody performs for 3 minutes, regardless of what they have. And so I do that every single class.
Nice.
And then what I'm trying to teach them, though, is because, like, you know, it's the, we're comedy on Zoom is hard. Comedy on Zoom is hard for professionals. So it starting out as an amateur who's never done comedy, and now you're in a format that is hard for professionals.
Yeah.
It's going to be a weird, awkward class. But the one thing that I have, because I have 8 classes with them. So after 5 classes, they should have 5 minutes of jokes. And then the next 3 classes, I spend with them strictly on their performance. So that way, they know the terminologies, they know where to get started, and they've got their first 5 when you walk out of my class.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm trying to accomplish. And I'm not going to lie. Yo, I feel like I'm too hard on the kids, man. I'm like, well, they're not kids. There's some old motherfuckers in my class. But, like, I feel like maybe – because, like, this is how I move, right? That's my process. This is what I do. How I – as a professional, how do I work? This is how I work. You know what I'm saying? And my work is very effective. My you know, like, and I'm trying to show them these
there's
things.
There's no room for being soft in comedy, let's be honest, right? Like, to baby somebody – like, you, like, for instance, you don't baby me, you know what I'm saying? I've been doing comedy with you for a couple of years now, and you said it to me several times. I'm throwing you in today, you know what I'm saying? Today's the day where I'm just throwing you into the fire, and it's like, essentially, I appreciate that more than if you would have babied me, because I'm not learning shit if you baby me, you know what I'm saying? We did that.
I ain't babying your 6'4" ass.
you know what I'm saying, though, you know what I mean? As far as comedy.
Giant man in the living room talking about, you go baby me? No! You ain't fitting in no goddamn car seats, nigga.
But you know what I mean? We did that Fort St. John.
Oh, that was a hard one.
Yeah, yeah.
That was hard.
Yeah.
And that was like, definitely throw your ass in the fire.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
That was set up for you to lose.
Right, right. And even the
and
whole.
And you came through. You came through winning. You came through stunting. I'm not going to lie.
I did all
right. You did your thing. You know what I'm saying? And but that is a perfect example of. Well, because the way I look at it is, when I was coming up, I had a lot of desires to be on certain stages or on certain crowds, and people would always tell me, you're not ready, you're not ready. And it's like, how will I ever know if I'm ready if you never give me the opportunity? And so now when I'm in my position of power and someone's like, I'm ready, I'm like, show me. I'm going to put you up there, because at the end of the day, when you come off that stage, you're not going to ask me if you're ready or not anymore. You know if you're ready or not. You don't have to ask me if you've killed. If you're after you kill, you know it. So all you're asking me is to give you more admiration. And if you bomb, you fucking know you bomb.
Yeah.
And you don't need me to pat you on the back at that point either, because what you're never going to do is tell me that you're ready again until you're fucking ready.
Word.
Because I live and die in that world. Like, this, that opportunity I gave you is where I work. That's where I live.
Yeah.
So if you want to become a comedian, this is the ocean, baby. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's comedy. Driving out to a weird-ass little town with a bunch of people who you don't identify with, will never be friends or hang out with, and you've got to go on stage to these 150 people and in 5 minutes make them fall in love with you. That is fucking insane.
Yeah.
And if you want that, come get some, because that's where I live.
Yeah.
And you did it. So that's why I was like, I wanted to know about the class, because like I said, man, I want results, because I'm like, yo, you know what? I'm not going to lie. I have a very strong inclination that people are going to be, listen, everybody, my dedicated 40, I talk mad shit about comedy classes, okay? I talk mad shit
big
about
shit.
Them. I say, don't do them. I say, fuck comedy classes. The only way you learn is on stage. So now
this nigga roasted the shit out of me one day when I told him that's how I started comedy, was taking a class.
Yes. Yes, because that shit is hilarious to me. And so now I'm a comedy class teacher. I have become the hypocrite. And so if my students don't come out banging, if my students don't come out whooping ass, I have a very strong feeling I'm going to get a lot of backlash that I will deserve from the comedy community for all the shit I've talked.
Absolutely.
Because I'm a teacher at the Grindstone Theater, and the Grindstone Theater just opened back up, and so nobody knows that I'm a teacher there yet. But as soon as they start doing live performances, actually in March, they're going to know, because they apparently, the Grindstone's been so happy with my teaching that they are actually going to.
So you a good comedy teacher. Okay, all right.
Yo, I got to do like teaser seminars for their to recruit more people and stuff. And it's where people can come in and watch me teach.
Man, I'm going to get you the jacket with the elbows.
Yeah, I deserve one. Yeah. And I'll just make sure that there's like a little inside slot for a Mickey and a joint. I'm going to come in and start saying, well, how do you feel? Like, I'm sorry. Like, yo, man, and it's crazy because we're doing this podcast and I'm smoking weed. And I, as soon as this podcast is done, I have to log on and teach a class. And I'm like... this is just who I am, man. Like, man, I just can't stop being this piece of shit. Like,
hey, you show me a teacher that doesn't smoke weed, and I'll show you a frustrated motherfucker.
I will show you my high school, because I saw some frustrated motherfuckers, yo. I once saw a gym teacher pick up a desk and threaten to fight the student in the middle of the class, and I said, God damn, Miss Tomasikio, a bad bitch. Yeah, she was a female gym teacher, and she grabbed Andrew Williams' desk and whipped it out of the way and said, you want to do this, Andrew? Oh, let's go.
Andrew pumped out, didn't he?
Yo, Andrew, in his defense, he was a real, like, hood dude, like, muscular, like, rob people type of dude, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And he didn't feel like, he's like, I didn't know there was a test today. And she's like, it doesn't matter. You missed the class. Now you go write this test. And then he knocked the test off the desk.
Oh, shit.
You know, signifying mana mana badman. And then when he did that, the teacher was like, sefe. Se blood clot fe. Because she picked up his desk, threw it to the left like she was Beyonce packing up fucking her man's them things, and said, Andrew, you want to do this?
Wow.
And he was sitting there, and this is where I'm like, I don't know if he was scared or if he really, because he's a, like, he could hurt people, right? Yeah. But, like, I had never, she was ready. Like, she was, like, the fire in her, she was like, this is what we play for. Like, she's like, I can't wait to fight you. And he laughed, got up, and just walked out the class. And he told us later on, he's like, if I was to hit her, I'm going to jail,
still
bro.
Be in jail today.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to jail, bro. That's stupid. He's like, she weighs like a 105, bro. I slam people. Like, he used to, like, beat up dudes. He was in grade 9. He was body slamming people in grade 12 in the hallway, for real. Like, picking them up, slamming them in the floor, because they were like, we're going to initiate you. And then he would stomp them out for trying to initiate him.
Yeah.
So it would have been a good fight. That's all I'm saying. It would have been a good fight, because she definitely had her opening move, because she was like crouched down low, hands spread, like she was in her self-defense class. Like she was like
she was like your ex-girlfriend. She was like trying to kick her out.
She was like J-Lo in Enough. You know what I mean? She was ready to rock, baby. Okay. But Andrew is like a certified person that would rob people. And so I was like, ooh, this is going to be good. This is going to be crazy.
Yeah, we grew up in a different time, man. Because, like, I had a teacher trying to fight me, too. You know, so he punched me in the stomach.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Oh, my God. What happened? What?
Yo, I was passing notes with this girl, mad cute. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to her. I won't even say her name. But she passed me a note. You know what I'm saying? And it had all kind of ratchet shit on the note. I'm going to keep it real. I was in, like, the eighth grade, I think. She had all kind of ratchet shit.
You had a very young and terrible life.
Ratchet, yeah, always. You know what I'm saying? And the teacher saw her pass it to me and starts walking over to me immediately. You know what I'm saying? With that, you know what I'm saying? He had that face like, oh, you son of a bitch. I'm going to get to the bottom of this. And yeah, man, while he's walking over to me, I just crumpled the whole paper up and put it in my mouth. Yeah, I was like, fuck it. You ain't getting this shit. You know what I'm saying?
He's still doing fat people's stuff. This motherfucker's first reaction is to eat the goddamn paper.
Hey, what's he going to do?
True. So, what's he going to do?
Yeah. So I'll tell you what he's going to do. he walked up to me and punched me in the stomach real quick.
I was like,
yo, legit. Like, he just like, somebody saw me put it in my mouth. He went from walking to running, and he just, huh. And it worked, because I spit that shit out and said, what the fuck?
That's funny, though.
Yeah.
But we had, you know what, man? We had a fucked up teacher, too. And this is not when we were in the age where we should be taking punches. This was grade two. And his name was Mr. Murphy. Yeah. And Mr. Murphy had an anger problem. Mr. Murphy, and this is real shit, man. Yo, Mr. Murphy once taped a student to the chalkboard. Yes. Like, I'm talking, the chalkboard is not on the floor. The chalkboard is off the ground, and there's a student taped to the wall. And we're like, what the fuck, Mr. Murphy? And I'll never forget, I went to class. So Mr. Murphy, it was recess. It was an indoor recess, and Mr. Murphy was patrolling the halls. And in indoor recess in grade one, you're a lunatic. You know what I mean? You go crazy.
Yeah.
And so we were going crazy because we had a supply teacher. And everybody knows when you have a supply teacher, it's fuck the world. Don't ask me for shit. Mm. Right? So not only that, but I'm in grade one, so I'm already a badass. So we decide it's wild out time, indoor recess, fuck what the teacher says. And Mr. Murphy walks in to check on us and sees that we're going chaotic. The whole room stops. Except this one little white boy. I never forget him. He sat next to me. His name was Bobby. I never forget Bobby. Because Bobby was like, nah, man, enough's enough. War paint on, baby. Bobby decides, while everybody is shrinking back to their desk, Bobby decides to walk up to Mr. Murphy and be like, what you doing here, Mr. Murphy? And Mr. Murphy was like, get back in your seat. And he's like, nah. When he said nah, everybody just gasped. We're like, and he picked Bobby up from the front of his shirt, like off the ground. And wow. He said, you get in your desk right now. And then he let him go from the top and dropped him on the ground. Wow. Bobby locks onto his legs and goes, Mr. Murphy Bell Bottoms, you got a girlfriend. The class erupts. Mr. Murphy's face is red. He's trying to kick Bobby off. He literally turns, raises his foot to stomp him. And he looks up at the teacher, eyes just burning fire. And he just drags Bobby down the hall. Bobby refuses to let go. Wow. He takes him to the office that way. And then Bobby, we saw him at lunch, and he was a god. But he got fucking suspended, and he never came back. But, yo, Mr. Murphy was abusive like that. And after that, like, the fire was just gone. Like, Bobby, if I ever get to meet that guy again, you a wild motherfucking dog. He took on the demon.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I done had some wild shit happen at school, but, you know, we probably shouldn't talk about all of this kind of.
I know. We don't have the time to get into all of that, man. Yeah. But we will, because, I mean, damn. I mean, like, whew, the traumatization in our young lives. Well, speaking in current events for everybody. Yo, the Jay-Z, how fucking old am I? So Jay-Z combined with Ace of Spades, got bought out half of, I think it was by Hennessy, Moet Hennessy.
Yeah, I heard, yeah.
And, like, obviously nobody's going to say anything bad towards it and think it's a great deal. I do think it's a good deal. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't know, man, because it's like I didn't read the details of the deal. Because as far as that looks like to me, it's like he got rich, and now when we buy Ace of Spades, it's going to their pockets.
Yeah.
Is that what's happening? Because
I'm not 100. I didn't really read the details either, but yeah, it sounds like.
Well, because isn't that really seem like, yo, motherfucker, I'm rich, and y'all motherfuckers give your money to him. I'm out. like, I mean, maybe I'm overthinking it, but it's like, wait a minute. If they bought in for half, they gave him a shit ton of money for that half.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy for that part. But wait a minute. Every time we buy your shit, now they get that money? The best thing for us to do right now is to just stop buying Ace of Spades.
I was going
to
say, find another, yes. You know what I'm saying? Find another new black business.
And then get out of it. Yeah.
And help them make it to that spot too.
Exactly.
And then do it. That's just
because, like, he got the money. He got the money. So we're happy for him. Praises to him.
It's endgame.
Right? And it's like, okay. Here's how we pull the rug out from these motherfuckers. After you paid all that money, you just say, and now we're not buying your shit. Reparations, bitch.
Like, yo, listen, I wouldn't be surprised if Jay was already on that tip. if Jay already had a small business that says, you know what, I'm gonna help y'all out. Give me, yeah. give me 2 months.
Some Crippa Cola.
Yeah. Oh shit. Hell yeah.
Oh man. Well, yeah. That's what I'm hoping happens, because, like, I don't really see it as like a racial equality thing when these companies who are infamously known for being racially biased towards us all of a sudden buys into the black community.
Yeah.
I think they do it because they know that the buying power of the black community is that, well, we still don't know how to act right with money in a majority sense. Yeah. You know, obviously there's going to be black people listening and being like, what, fuck that shit. And there's other black people like buying stuff right now while like, man, fuck you. But like, in general, we don't do well with saving our finances. We like to spend. We like to blow that dough, right? So I feel like they're looking at it as an opportunity to capitalize on that income, not care about our community.
Yeah.
And the only way I would ever see them try to care about the community is I see what their actions are when they start getting that dough, 100%. Right? But then again, it's like, am I going too far? Because I'm like, man, see, I don't put that bias on a black person, because when they're getting that dough, I'm like, get it quickly. They're going to get you. I'm just like, get it quickly and run away. Run. Because I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, you can't stay famous too long as a black person. They go get you.
Yeah.
They go get you. And so I don't put that bias on black companies. But when it's like a non-black company, I'm sitting there like, you better give it all back. I know we bought your stuff now. Give it back.
Yeah,
you know? I don't know, but am I going too? Am I thinking too deep? Or is my militant hat on too hard?
I don't know, man. I kind of sort of feel like you can't never have your militant hat on too hard. But then we've all seen those. You know, we've all seen those people who it's like, oh yeah, you did too
much.
Nah,
I know a couple people.
Yeah.
Whose militant hat is way too damn tight.
Yeah, yeah.
They get mad about everything. They get mad about everything. And it's just like, goddamn. Like, for example, in the news, the dude that plays Dr. Hibbert's voice on The Simpsons is a white guy, and he's now stepping down because he's like, I don't want to, you know, voice a black person so that, you know.
They cancel me next week.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm like, well, they go have to kill Dr. Hibbert, because if I hear any other voice, I'm gonna be like, ew.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So in other words,
I don't think that's a big deal. Like, for me, that's not helping the situation. That is a voice actor making a voice.
Well, now he's responsible for the death of a black character. So.
Well, that's not his fault. It's him him being pressured and stepping down is what I feel. And listen, as a black person, with all the struggles we have going on right now, the last thing I give a fuck about is who the fuck is voicing a cartoon character.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, especially one that we've all come to love over the years. Mm-hmm. I love Dr. Hibbert and his silly little laugh.
Absolutely.
Now I'm going to have to hear another motherfucker. And it's just like, it never going to sound right. He going to sound like Jerome off of Family Guy.
I thought you was talking about Jerome off of Martin.
I said Jerome and watch your mind. That'd be even more racist if they like replaced the Dr. Hibbert voice with like a Cardi B male version and like, let me open your mouth and go, let me check your tab. I gotta put it in your booty. You got a wet ass booty. And it's like, what happened to Dr. Hibbert? This is not cool. So I hope that's not. I mean, there's so many ways that we could deal with injustice, and have to understand. Like, for me personally, if for my white listeners, racial injustice is not us wanting more. It's just to be treated as equals. The same way I'm okay with Dr. Hibbert's voice being a white guy. The same way. Y'all should be okay with a black man fucking your white daughter. Hey. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I'm saying. Because if I can accept this, you can accept that. That's okay, right now I'd like to make a disclaimer that I absolutely believe what I just said. And if you didn't like that and you didn't laugh at that, fuck you, because that shit was hilarious.
Yeah,
anyways,
I give that a thumbs up. I support this message.
I support that message. I'm like, okay. But yo, we gotta wrap this up, because I've got to irresponsibly teach a comedy class and do a dress. Who the fuck does a dress rehearsal for a Zoom fucking show where I'm the host? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm wearing a fucking bonnet and a t-shirt that says Mr. Right Now. And I am not changing. I am setting up in this outfit with the mean face like this is what you asked for. And I am teaching that class and I'm doing that shit. And for all my listeners of Dedicated 40, check out next on Tuesday, the 1st or the 2nd of March, I believe, is it? I don't know. Who cares? Yo, Tuesday at 9 p.m., check out CTV Comedy because your boy is back on television. They're celebrating Black History Month, and they're celebrating the stellar comedians of Canada.
Hey.
And I'm one of them, and so please make sure you guys check that out. And make sure you guys laugh.
I'm gonna be on the next one, you know.
It's gonna happen.
Yeah, then
and yo,
they didn't call me this time, but it's all right.
Be easy, yo. Let the people know who you is so they can follow you and also cuss you out in for your coming late ass.
Yeah, man. Catch me on all social media at BeazyBuzz. That's BeazyBuzz.
Alright, ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of
yeah.
The Comedy Reject Podcast. See you soon.